This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
This is from Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shobogenzo. Dongshan's teachings of the insentient. Dongshan said, "Do you hear it?" Dongshan said, and Yunyan said, "If I heard it, then you wouldn't hear my teaching." And Dongshan said, "Well, that being the case, then I don't hear your teaching." Yunyan said, "You don't even hear my teaching. How could you hear the teachings of the wondrous, marvelous? The teachings of the insentient are inconceivable. If you listen with the ears, you won't understand. When you hear with the eyes, then you'll know." Commentary. The 10,000 things are neither sentient nor insentient. The self is neither sentient nor insentient. Therefore, the teachings of the insentient can't be perceived by the senses. This teaching is heard before there's a body and after mind is forgotten. It was heard before our parents were born and before the Buddha appeared. It's not a matter of ordinary consciousness. How then can it be heard? When body and mind have fallen away in the stillness that follows, the teaching is intimately manifested in great profusion. Whether we're aware of it or not, it's always taking place. Verse. The teaching of the insentient, if you try to grasp it, you'll miss it. It has no form. If you try to let it go, you can't separate from it. It's not formless. Subtle and wondrously inconceivable. So we're in our final hours of this Sangho. The ship is starting to come into harbor. So to think about how for so many hundreds of years, beginning in the time of the Buddha, and then continuing on through all of these generations, different sanghas, different countries, different ways of gathering, different ways of practicing. That oceanic gathering, you know, if we think about how through much of the history, there was a lot of traveling. Students on pilgrimage going from place to place, gathering at certain monasteries for training periods. And so you can imagine what that would be like as it was beginning and people were coming in and all the energy and the setting things up and then doing Ango for the 3 months, and really as a cloister, people not leaving, people not coming. And then at the end, that culmination, and then people setting out again, that pulse. This was, I think is a really important teaching in the Zen tradition. Not unique. There's very little that's unique in the Dharma, within the Dharma itself, but important and kind of very forward-thinking, very prescient in terms of its importance for us. How do we relate to the 10,000 things around us? How do we relate to our world? You know, that question that's been asked earlier this week in talks about how do we utilize what we are doing, our practice, how do we put it to work, and so on. Of course, that's an essential question. What can be hard to, you know, that's not, that's in no way secondary in Buddhism. In Buddhism, that's the question. It's how do we live it? What can be hard to understand, well, relate it to something, this Dharma. How will I use this? How is this going to affect my life? How is this relevant? Not because those aren't valid questions, but because there's a time where those questions have to drop. Because otherwise, those questions themselves will prevent us from encountering the Dharma directly. It's kind of like, you know, seeing a wonderful meal laid out and asking, how can I use this food to give my life energy? Well, sit down and eat. Eat the food. And now you have energy. What will you do with it? And so this is similar. We have to eat. And that's what this week is. That's what Anga is. Really, that's what every day is for the life of a practitioner. And so this, you know, to trust that when we speak of compassion, when we use that word and all that it means, that at the same time we're speaking about wisdom. Wisdom, compassion. That when we're speaking about or reflecting on wisdom, we're trying to practice the awakening of wisdom to compassion. They're inseparable. And so sometimes when the teachings may seem opaque or distant or, you know, sort of dharmic in the sense that, you know, what does this have to do with my life? If it's Dharma, that's what it's about. That's all it's about. That's all it's ever been about. I mean, you think about the life of the Buddha, he doesn't seem like the kind of person who was about wasting time and just frittering around and like just doing stuff to be busy. He was clearly driven by a very intense sense of urgency, a sense of imperative. And so in this teaching, in this koan, and the whole koan around, the mondo around it, you know, we could hear this as sort of abstract or distant or, you know, the Western base is that, you know, the people, the priests, the monastics, usually who devote their, they really seem sort of insular, you know, and sort of self-perpetuating, and that can happen. But that's not what's happening here. So how do we hear the teachings? Dongshan is asking his teacher, who can hear the teachings of the Ascension? How do we hear the teachings? We listen and we hear words, sounds that are formed into collections of different sounds that we've been taught to understand mean have meaning. And that in and of itself is a miracle. Is a kind of magic. It's like empty space becoming a bright blue sky. But how does meaning become something more than just a description of something? How does language become something more than just about something? Something that's over there. How do the teachings not just speak about intimate contact, but bring forth that intimate contact within us? And it's blue, we see that it's just empty space. It is heard before there is a body and after the mind is forgotten. It was heard before our parents were born, before the Buddhas appeared. It's not a matter of ordinary consciousness. So how can it be heard? When body and mind have fallen away, in that stillness, the teaching is intimately manifested in great profusion, which means completely. Whether we're aware of it or not, it's always taking place. And for me, this was always so compelling and maddening. Because I thought, if it's always taking place, then what the hell's going on? Why aren't I hearing it now and then, you know, like occasionally? If it's happening all the time, what's going on? and how this language is being stretched to its capacity, exploded, because language has to use itself, right? So language is using words that already have meaning. Otherwise, you have to make up a whole new language, right? And then you're just conveying the same old stuff. So how do you use words that have already meaning, which means they're already made definite, to convey something that's not definite? What kind of project is that? And so I would reflect on this enlightenment poem of Dongshan. If you listen with the ears, you won't understand. Okay, if you hear with the eyes, what? What does that mean? Well, clearly it doesn't mean, it's not literal, right? Because then it's just another definite thing. So it's exploding so that we can realize there is some way of hearing that is not like the old way. To arrive at the place before there's a body, after mind is forgotten, in the stillness that follows. The teaching is intimately manifested. The stillness is not just an ordinary stillness. Not just being still and quiet, not just not moving. Although we can get a sense, perhaps, of it in just our ordinary zazen, how we begin, we're introduced to the road, and meeting it in a deliberateness, a consciousness. I see you, but I don't belong to you. Over the course of time, how there are shades of stillness or shades of not being still, they continue to linger, that restlessness that continues to rumble around. And we get a sense that, oh, there's stillness, but then there's stillness. And then there's stillness. How far does that go? Before the body moves, after the mind is forgotten, when no sense of self or other can be found. So how do we arrive at such a place? Well, for the time being, there are two ways to study, with mind and body. In the full dialogue, Dogen just selected this very short passage at the end of this dialogue, which begins when Dongshan's studying with Guishan. And he says that one day he heard the national teacher had given a teaching on the fact that inanimate beings expound the Dharma. He said, the teacher said, a wall tile, a brick. And the student said, a wall tile? Isn't that inanimate? And the teacher said, yes. And the student says, and it can expound the Dharma? And the teacher said, it expounds it brilliantly, without ceasing. And the student says, then why can't I hear it? The teacher says, you yourself may not hear it, but that doesn't mean that others can't hear it. And the student said, who are the people who can hear it? And the teacher said, all the holy ones can hear it. Then the student said, can you hear it? And the teacher says, no, I can't hear it. If I could hear it, then I would be equal to the saints, and you wouldn't be able to hear me expound the Dharma. And the student says, but all beings can't understand that sort of speech. In other words, if only the saints, if only the enlightened beings can hear it, then all of us can't hear it. How can we benefit from it? And the teacher says, I expound the Dharma for the sake of beings, not for the holy ones, and beings. And then he asked, what scriptures teach about this? And the national teacher said, obviously, this is not found in the scriptures. Nor is it something that some enlightened being has said. But haven't you heard the words of the flower garland? And then he quotes a line from it. And Dongshan says, I'm not clear about this. I asked you for instruction about it. So Guishan lifted up his stick and said, do you understand? Dongshan says, no. Can you explain it to me? And Guishan said, the mouth that my parents gave to me is utterly unable to explain this. It's not possible. And Dongshan said, is there anyone else of your generation whom you respect who can explain it? I always love these moments, you know? It's like he's been given this whole meal. And then it's like, do you know anybody else who cooks around here? But as it go to Liling in Yu country, where there are stone houses strung together, there, look for a person of the way named Yunyang. He says, see if he'll teach it to you. And so he finally went to see Yunyang. And when he found him, he related the whole story. And then he asked, who can hear inanimate things expound the Dharma? And Yunyan said, that which is inanimate. The insentient can hear it. And Dongshan asked, can you hear it? Same question. Yunyan said, if I could hear it, then you wouldn't hear me expound the Dharma. Same answer. Dongshan says, why can't I hear it? And Yunyan says, can you hear this? And Dongshan says, no, I can't hear you. And Yunyan said, when I expound the Dharma, you can't hear me, so how do you expect to hear the teachings of the insentient? And then he asks again, are there any scriptures that teach about this? So he quotes the Amitabha Sutra, which says, the lakes and rivers, the birds, forests, they all chant Buddha. They all chant Dharma. And at hearing this, it said, Dongshan, what is the mind of ancient Buddhas? An insentient being. In front of you, what do you hear in facing the insentient stones? Don't merely mean mountains and rivers and earth where you're standing. Kinds of mountains, like great Sumeru and small Sumeru. Some extend widely, some rise up steeply. A billion worlds, innumerable lands can be found in a mountain. And so there are mountains that appear as mountains. Sun, moon, and stars. There are mountains that appear as tiles, bricks, and stone. There are mountains that appear as aches in your legs, as tiredness, as elation, as inspiration, as insight, as warmth. And so the question is, what is the teaching of these sentient and insentient beings? Why discriminate? Why differentiate? Because we do. We differentiate. And we don't only differentiate, but we rank. And we rank within ranks, within ranks, within ranks. And so to think of the most profound, the most important, the most sacred, the most essential, that which you desperately want to understand, to see, to make your very life in something that is inanimate, like a wall tile, something that in every way seems inert, dull, dead. What is this teaching? That it expounds brilliantly and without ceasing. Now, of course, the teachings in Buddha Dharma, in the history of Buddhism, began with the Buddha. The Buddha expounded the teachings. And so when the Buddha taught, the teachings were being expounded. Because all beings have Buddha nature, every being who realizes that Buddha nature thus can expound the Dharma. But all beings, every person, ordinary beings expound the Dharma. Sometimes they expound Buddha Dharma without knowing it. And so sometimes even when advertising thinks it's expounding Buddha Dharma, it's not Buddha Dharma. It's co-opting. It's appropriating. It's by, we use, we discard. but don't give much attention to, is being brought forth as that which is expounding the Dharma, right? Which has the potential to awaken our mind. So we have to, in other words, this is saying, use everything, use all that you have, waste nothing. Because everything is teaching ceaselessly. Use what's before your eyes. Use what's within your eyes. Use your eyes themselves. Use seeing. Use not seeing. But use them in all the ways that they can be used. Which means in the beginning, we have to go a different way than before. That's sort of the basic guideline. We have to go a different way. Because we know what happens if we go the same way, which doesn't stop us hardly at all from going the same way again and again. So we are stubborn. But ultimately, we have to go a different way. That's the courage of a spiritual practitioner. In a sense, we have to don't be alive, don't be dead. Don't be sentient, don't be insentient. Don't be a self, don't be other than self. Don't be enlightened, don't be deluded. Don't be right, don't be wrong. In other words, do what every other living creature does. Which is just another way of saying, do what you do. Do what it is not possible for you and me not to do. And awaken to that. Another way of saying it is, have faith. Have faith in the teachings. Take them seriously. One would think that, what more evidence do you need that we are taking this seriously? Putting our butts on the line, working diligently, facing what's difficult to face. And yet so many moments within our sincerity, at those moments we're not always taking the Dharma seriously in the sense of listening. The once person hears the teachings, they become an ordinary being. That's the 10th ox herding picture. That's the person who's lost their shine. And having Buddha nature means we each have that capacity. Just straight up. That's the news. We each have that capacity. We can have faith in that or not. We can turn towards it or not. We can practice it or not. It doesn't change a thing as far as Buddha nature is concerned. It is unchangeable. And so when the Metta Sutra says, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace, be able and upright. To be able is that natural inheritance, Buddha nature. So we come into this world able, as far as Buddha nature is concerned. That's not enough. It means within this body, and sometimes that seems unfair, that it's less or unavailable to them. We call that injustice. We call that inequality within equality. Being here now, being able, how do we use our ability? Take heed, do not squander your life. You know, those of us who are accustomed to hearing that as the final words of our day, we might grow accustomed to that, but to think of that, ending the day on the path of liberation, having spent time calming your mind, opening your heart. And then, zzz, an arrow is shot. Do not squander this life. Don't underutilize it. Don't misutilize it. Don't create unrealistic expectations. That's what I hear in Dongshan's persistent asking. And his continuing to ask, he goes to Guishan. Guishan offers him all that he needs, really. And then, part of the story you don't get told. That's the part of our story that we have to create. Or not create, but we have to live it. What is happening? Right? It's like when Zuise was talking about, you know, being sent out of Doksan. Right? How many times walking out, crushed, defeated, hopeless, failed? How many times walking out, I got this. Smooth sailing from here on out. You should already know you're in trouble. But then what the most important part of that Doksan is just starting to happen. Out of sight of the teacher. Not hearing the teaching in the Doksan room. It's now really starting to happen. And that's why we see how soundly it rests within our own hands. Who can hear the teachings of the insentient? It can be heard by the insentient. Which means it can't be heard by this body of senses and desires and thoughts and impulses and habits. To let go of the self that is sentient, that is tethered, to dependent upon, being defined by all of that stuff, that marvelous, marvelous stuff we call the skandhas. To arrive at that place before there is a body and after the mind is forgotten, before our parents were born, before the Buddha has appeared, can think, well, how is this going to help me? Because I have to live within my ordinary consciousness. True. But what is ordinary consciousness? Dogen says to study with mind means to study with various aspects of mind, consciousness, emotion, intellect. Later in the fascicle, he talks about everyday mind. Is he and Daito Roshi disagreeing? Daito Roshi says it's not a matter of ordinary consciousness. When Dogen says words are all-inclusive, mind is all-inclusive, things are all-inclusive, wall tiles, bricks, stones are all-inclusive. To hear that, to experience that directly, we ourselves have to be all-inclusive. Only a Buddha can realize Buddha. Only compassion can awaken compassion. Only wisdom can realize wisdom. Because otherwise, there's two. And so we ourselves, so how do you make yourself insentient? Don't even think that thought. That will surely get you into trouble. And we can, in a sense, do that, be doing that in practice when we're not practicing well. When we're trying to turn ourselves into a non-thinking, non-experiencing piece of wood, an idea of practice. Rather, when we study carefully, meticulously, in accord with the Dharma, then we arrive as that piece of wood, without having not included anything It is all-inclusive. Words are all-inclusive. Meaning divides. Words are all-expansive. Words narrow. And thus, the exploding. Not because the words need exploding, but to explode our minds, to expand the possibility within our minds. So we don't just go back into our ordinary narrow ways of thinking. How do we rattle ourselves free of that? Dogen also says birth is the emergence of undivided activity, all inclusive. Death is the emergence of undivided activity. Because in sentient objects, in sentient beings, have no meaning, they are all-inclusive. They are perfect like vast space. They are continually expounding the Dharma. They are not confused. They do not divide. But we can use wall tiles and bricks to divide, to create boundaries, physical boundaries, which are really just things that we call walls. They don't divide. It's the mind that's already divided. And so practice is always turning to this place, this seat of not all-inclusive. Of not perfect like vast space. And practicing all of those ways that we create that sense of desecration. When this is seen clearly, again and again and again and again and again, 100 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, then we begin to understand. It lays bare the notion, and we begin practicing the precepts. And that helps us to calm our mind, and we begin practicing, and that takes us into deeper states of concentration, and we realize wisdom, and that brings us to the world. Each step is all-inclusive. Each step is undivided. Each step perfect like vast space. That's how we should intend to practice. When we give instruction in all the different ways we do, we being 2,500 years of Buddhism, that's what it's all pointing to. Go that way. Dongshan says, do you hear it, Master? And Yunnan said, if I heard it, then you wouldn't hear my teaching. And he says, well, that being the case, then I don't hear your teaching. And he says, if you're not hearing my teaching, then how can you hear the teachings of the insentient? So first we have to listen. And then we have to listen. When the teachings of insentient are heard, Dongshan can't hear them, Yunnan can't hear them. The insentient can't hear them. And it's in this way that bodhisattvas offer themselves. And that offering is not a sacrifice. Renunciation, in a sense, can appear as a sacrifice. We let go of something that we're holding on to, and it's renunciation because there's a part of us that says, oh, it doesn't want to let go. If that wasn't true, then it's not renunciation. Renunciation is because there's a tug. And so in a sense, there we are choosing to give something up, to sacrifice something. But the bodhisattva doesn't live by sacrifice. It's just they're not, as he called, the moral heroes. And so he's, you know, the world. And so he says, he sort of talks about the, you know, significant characteristics. He says one is that they don't overthink things. They don't get bogged down in calculations and thoughts and possibilities and what ifs and how long and what about this. And And this is based on interviewing, studying moral heroes. And he said, for all of them, they had examples. In other words, the seeds were planted by observing other people who were living this kind of life. How important that is. He said that they had tended to have a this is what I do mentality. In other words, it was like a no big deal kind of thing. It wasn't lofty. It wasn't extraordinary. This is just what you do. Isn't everybody like this? He quoted Mother Teresa who said, what I do is as simple and common as the laughter of a child. He said they have a weird obliviousness to inferior pleasures, being okay. Sufficient is okay, which I guess is what other people think are inferior pleasures. Or maybe they're pleasures that are actually inferior. Maybe they're not very pleasurable and they're okay. In other words, that's not really what they want to focus on. He says they don't really talk too much about their personal happiness. They're not that focused on that. What they're focused on is helping other people. He says when they perform great acts of selfless service, they don't see it that way. They don't see it as a great act. Right? Like courageous people don't really think that they're being courageous in the moment of being courageous. A bodhisattva does not think, I am being a bodhisattva. As they're being selfless, they're just responding. He says they have what he calls a constant goal expansion, which he really describes in a better way, I think, as they're constantly learning. They're constantly developing, which I hear as they love to learn. They want to learn. They want to be larger, which means, in a certain sense, they want to be challenged. They're willing to be challenged, which means they're going to be willing to be made uncomfortable, right? Because in the moment when we're being asked to be larger, we're not. We're not manifesting that. And so there's that stretching sound, right? It can be uncomfortable. They work with others. They're not sole agents. It's not all about them, and they alone are not optimistic. They see the realities of the world, and they work for the benefit of what could be done, what can be done. I see what appears to be entrenched. I see what is stuck. I see what sucks. And I'm going to put my energy into what can we do? What can be done here? He says they invariably move from fragmentation to integration, from distance to closeness. You know, Buddhism is not about Buddhism. Buddha Dharma is not about Buddha Dharma. The Buddha was not about the Buddha. It's this world, this life, this humanity, this time. And Buddha Dharma gives us a tremendous way in. It gives us a path. It's a vessel, right? Ship that for the moment appears to be coming into harmony. Some of us will be working hard. And then celebrate. But hard and focused is to then pause for a moment and say, here we are, practicing together, and then continue. The teachings of the insentient, if you try to grasp them, you'll miss it. It has no form. If you try to let it go, you can't separate yourself from it. It's not formless. What is it? Subtle, wondrously inconceivable. The muse constantly reveals the mysterious teachings of the 10,000 things. Everyone, I have to think, everyone has experienced this in their life. A moment within the vaulted sky, at the edge of the ocean, in the desert, at the foot of a mountain, looking into the eyes of a baby, thinking of the one you love, having passed through something that's difficult, understanding something suddenly that seemed inaccessible. Fragmentation coming together into wholeness. Distance becoming unified. What we do, after all, is as simple and common as the laughter of a child. The fact that it takes so much effort is because we're not children. And it's how to laugh, how to have that kind of laughter when facing the whole catastrophe, as Dada Roshi would say. What an incredible invitation. And so let's be able and upright through to the end of this session. Let's be worthy of that which we hold, this incredible Dharma. And in that worthiness, continue it so that it continues, not just for ourselves. What an incredible thing to be able to offer today, tomorrow, just by virtue of living our lives in the best way possible.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.